There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring doing stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a podcast!
Yeah, we're gonna be a podcast!
Starring everybody!
And me!
There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fuss that ends for us real happily.
Hey, a podcast!
We can hear it all develop!
Starring everybody!
And me!
We'll take the world and set it on its ear.
Come on, join in.
We're gonna start right here.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Get some chili dogs?
I got some corn dog bites, actually, for our show.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll get to it.
I was on theme.
So, we got a movie to talk about, but briefly, I wanted to sort of gloss over the... Now, a lot of people are like, this movie is so great, but I saw Birds of Prey, the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and they changed the title to just Harley Quinn Birds of Prey.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. It's officially changed on, like, you know, like theater bookings, like when you go to buy tickets, it's just called Harley Quinn Birds of Prey.
Oh, really?
And
is it because Lauryn Hill got mad or something, maybe? Or?
No. What?
Or is it Missy Elliott that has that album?
First of all, the titles are not similar, but you're thinking of Lauryn Hill, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That's what you're thinking.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that's the only thing it reminded me of when they had that title come out.
No, it's because they wanted it to make $50 million and it only made $33 million, and somehow it's being characterized as this huge failure.
Uh-huh.
Which the budget was not that big on that one. It'll make its money back, no problem. Anyway, if you asked me to tell you what the fuck happened in that movie, and that's not like, oh, it's so crazy. No, it's just because it was like super bland.
Oh.
I did not care. There were some fun performances. Ewan McGregor's fun. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who you may remember from the film Scott Pilgrim versus the World. She's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually found Margot Robbie to be kind of like, this is a little much. Like, yeah. And not like a little much in like a fun way, a little much in like a, yeah, all right.
But maybe then again, just buy the soundtrack instead.
It was a lot more of a stealth sequel to the really not good Suicide Squad movie than they were marketing it as.
Oh, okay.
But Suicide Squad opened to like a huge number.
Uh-huh.
And this, you know, kind of farted out the gate. they'll make their money back, but whatever, fall asleep to it on the plane. that's pretty much the kind of movie that is. But we have a much more important film to discuss, and that is a film called Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yep.
Which I, at the beginning of this week, said, you know, Lindsay, you have to go watch.
You have to go watch
the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
And I cursed you under my breath and logged on online and bought tickets.
Yep. So I saw this last night. Funnily enough, I bought tickets to an earlier screening, but I live in a town called, you may have heard of it, called Los Angeles. And even though I've lived here for 15 years, I miscalculated traffic and wound up showing up even like... So when I go to the movies, I typically... And that happens a lot. I typically try to give myself like, okay, the movie says it starts at 8, but it actually doesn't start until 8:17 because AMC typically has 17 minutes of trailers. So you have more time.
So many trailers, but there were a lot of trailers in front of this movie.
There sure were. Certainly were. So I typically give myself that much time, but I really miscalculated traffic. Plus I didn't know there was construction. Anyway, it's not important. Well, we got there. I saw this with my friend, and we got there probably about 17 minutes into the film, 17 to 18 minutes into the film. And we were like, do we give a shit about that? Because this is the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. And I said, now I kind of do want to see the whole thing. So,
like, yeah, you would have definitely missed something in the opening.
20 minutes is a lot.
Yeah.
So, technically, according to my ticket purchase history, because it was too late to cancel the other ticket, I saw this back to back.
Oh.
My ticket purchase history will forever be branded with back to back Sonic the Hedgehog tickets. Oh, God. Anyway, before we get into the movie, Lindsay, what is your history with the franchise Sonic the Hedgehog?
Oh, okay. So I didn't have a Sega Genesis as a kid, but I had a friend who did. I had a Super Nintendo. He had a Sega Genesis.
Sure.
And, you know, we'd like have play dates at each other's house. And so whenever I went over to his house, it was like, we're playing Sonic the Hedgehog, because that was the only time I ever got to play it. So I've played, I think, most of the original Genesis games and then the Dreamcast games. And right. I had a friend in middle school who was really into the Dreamcast games. And there are still songs from, like, the original soundtrack that are stuck in my head perpetually. Right. Mm. Like the Amy theme song that says papaya over and over again.
Man.
Yeah.
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 For the record, like, you know, I don't know. I grew up in the 80s, so Sonic the Hedgehog was a big thing because it was a big thing in the early 90s. I do think Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is, like, easily the best of that franchise.
But right, that's a very, one where they added Tails.
Yeah, that's a very common, that's a very common experience. A very common attitude, rather. But I would not call myself a fan of Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, yeah, I'm more of a Super Mario guy, if you have to pick one.
I liked both probably equally as a kid, but definitely.
But then Sonic kind of became like this really weird internet thing where.
Yeah. I don't understand all the Archie comic lore. Like, it starts getting real weird.
Yeah. That stuff has always just made me laugh that you would bother taking Sonic the Hedgehog that seriously. Like, I've always kind of mocked it a little bit. Like, yeah, all right. Really into Sonic the Hedgehog. Huh? Like, you know.
Did you watch the Saturday morning cartoon?
The weirdly serious one that was on ABC for like a, you know, 6 months or something like that.
Like, I watched that one, but I meant like the chicken robot and
mean the one with Urkel, starring Urkel as Sonic.
Yes.
Yeah, I did occasionally watch that. Ironically. I was not watching it because I thought it was good. I was watching it because I thought it was hilariously bad.
Well, I was like 7 years younger or so. I was watching it because I thought it was funny and good.
All right. Well, you learn things every day. Anyway, I went into this movie thinking LOL. Like,
right.
Okay. Which is probably what most people were doing was like, they made this. And the trailers. So famously, they had to go back and completely redesign the character because everybody was totally creeped out and making fun of it.
But his fucking teeth?
His weird teeth, which weirdly, I thought they did not fix as much as they
maybe should have. Yeah.
But mostly they fixed the eyes.
Yeah.
The eyes were like creepy human eyes earlier, and now they're like big cartoon eyes. And it worked. It's fine. For the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie, I kind of just sat there with my mouth agape for the entire thing because it was so fucking weird.
Yeah.
It was like out of time. Like, I feel like back in the 90s, now, which this makes sense, because back in the 90s, Sonic the Hedgehog was a thing and Jim Carrey was a thing.
Yes.
And this is a Sonic the Hedgehog movie starring Jim Carrey.
But it's 2020.
But it's 20 years later. 25 years later, let's say. I think in the back in the 90s, people wouldn't have blinked. They would not have blinked at the plot of this thing.
Right. It's like Space Jam, where it's cartoon characters with Michael Jordan.
Yeah. And if you watch Space Jam now, you're like, boy, they do not make shit like this at all anymore.
No.
And that was the feeling on this one. So the story is Sonic the Hedgehog is an alien hedgehog who lives on a weird, like a jungle world. And he like answers to this. Like Owl of Gahool. You ever see that movie, The Guardians of Gahool?
I did not see that. I know what it is.
But you know what I mean, though. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah. It looks like a character straight out of there.
Yeah. Like this owl mentor. And he's like being hunted for his incredible power on his homeworld. So he gets exiled. God.
So to escape.
So the rings. So the rings. Now everyone knows Sonic 1 has to go fast and 2 gets rings. So the rings in this are actually like portals to other worlds. Like you can do interdimensional and intergalactic travel using these rings. So he goes through the ring into like a small town in like, what was it, like Minnesota or Wisconsin or something like
Montana.
That.
Montana.
Yeah, Montana. Right.
And one of those M states.
He goes in exile into Montana. And there he starts kind of stalking this cop, James Marsden, who's sort of like small town bored cop with nothing to do. And he's like peeking in through their window and stuff and like watching TV like behind them and shit. Like he's creeping around basically.
Yeah.
And
making them like his surrogate family.
Yeah.
Sort of idea.
Right. And then So he winds up like for some reason breaking into their shed or whatever it is. And then he and James Marsden meet and it turns into kind of a buddy comedy.
Yeah. Road trip.
And then Dr. Robotnik shows up, which is Jim Carrey at a fucking 15. The entire he is at max Jim Carrey. So if you don't appreciate Jim Carrey's ridiculous buffoonery, this movie is not for you because he is in more than half of the movie and he is going fucking insane the entire time, which I got to tell you, I really appreciate it.
I've missed it, to be honest. Like, I grew up on his comedies. I probably saw ones at a younger age than I should have. Like, I remember my mom making me cover my ears for parts of Liar Liar. So, I mean, you know, I watched, like, everything he was in as a kid. Like, if Jim Carrey was in a movie, I was going to go see it. Like,
well, that was everywhere.
Him and Robin Williams were actors from my childhood where if I saw a trailer as a kid and they were in it, I wanted to see it just because they were in it.
And that was kind of that was kind of everyone in the 90s. Like, he was the biggest movie star in the world for a while. And he went through kind of an existential crisis and a severe depression and had some personal issues in his life. And now he sort of takes some stranger projects. This is kind of a return to the super, super broad comedy that he used to do, except like, so he was on Conan O'Brien not too long ago, and he was explaining that, like, so you remember that cartoon Wacky Racers with Dick Dastardly? That's what I'm going for with this. And I was like, oh well, I'm on board because I love me a Saturday morning cartoon villain. Like, it'll make you laugh. Like, it'll be, it'll be fun. And he was, I thought he was a tremendous amount of fun in this movie. Like, anytime he was on screen, I was like, all right, now we're back to business. Like,
like the whole scene where he's dancing around his lab at one point.
Well, okay, do you remember the part where he picks up the so the whole plot is that he finds one of Sonic's quills and that has like his Sonic's special lightning powers or whatever in it.
Yeah, it's like and a perfect energy source or something.
Yeah, and he picks it up off the ground and goes,
Omoshiroi. Yeah.
Subtitle says,
the one part with the subtitle because he speaks Japanese for a second.
It's like, what? What? And a lot of this movie was fucking like, what? Like, they go, so they have to go on a road trip to San Francisco for reasons I won't get into, and they stop at a gas station, and then right next to the gas station is this like overcrowded, extremely rowdy biker bar for some reason. And they get into a fight. Sonic eats some chili dogs, and then he farts and does the Fortnite floss dance.
Yeah, my son really liked that part. Yeah,
oh, I bet he did. this movie is fucking wacky. Like, it is wacky. And you don't really, like, here's the thing, though. Like, contrasting it with something like Birds of Prey, I walked out of this being like, I'm not going to forget that one.
Yeah.
Like, at least it wasn't bland. Like, it was just, it was fucking crazy and weird. Really weird.
Well, I mean, they had to, like, invent a whole... So, they're going to San Francisco because Sonic accidentally drops his bag of rings through a ring portal, and they end up in San Francisco. And so, they have to go retrieve his rings so that he can go to a mushroom world and get away from Robotnik and the people who are after him on Earth.
Like you do.
But the thing is, like, so... You know that Sonic could get to San Francisco in like a second. So they have to make a road trip movie out of it, though. So their whole thing is that he would get lost and can't get to San Francisco by himself.
Yeah.
So he has to ride in the pickup truck all the way there.
There's a lot of weird plot stuff where it's all contrivance. It's all just like invented. Like in the moment, they'll just like whip something out that's like, oh, here's why this has to be like this. And you're like, well, couldn't he just do that? And you're like, wait, I'm watching the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. I should stop asking questions and just sit back.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Honestly, as a if you like if you're the type of person who will watch bad things for fun or just likes to laugh and don't take yourself too seriously or whatever, and you're familiar with Sonic the Hedgehog, yeah, get some beers and some weed and put it on with some of your friends. Like you will have a good time. Like you really will. I walked out thinking it was like a B+. It was like, all right, okay.
Yeah. Like I thought
I'm
like,
glad it was interesting.
Yes, the script has some issues or whatever. Like all the parts where he did the slow-mo stuff was like a little too long. Like the bar sequence with him like he's going so fast, everything looks slow, and I was like,
and it's jam-packed with Zoomer memes. Like it is full of them. If you've ever heard of a Sonic meme, it's in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
And it's the comedy and everything is written directly for Zoomers. Like if you are 15, between the ages of 15 and 22, they made this for you. So
yeah.
So enjoy, I suppose.
Yeah. Like my kid got a kick out of it. Like I thought anything with Jim Carrey in it was great. Like he carried a lot of the film for me. And,
If they hadn't cast him, I think the movie would be pretty dreadful, honestly. Yeah. Like, it would have been a slog if they hadn't put him in that. But they put him in that and they just said, all right, go wild. And he did. And that elevated all of it, like, to the level where me, a Gen Xer, would enjoy the film anyway, even though...
Yeah, I was trying to explain to my son, like, why Jim Carrey was a big deal, and he didn't care or understand. And I was
you
like,
went home and put on the mask.
Yeah. God, I had that on tape. I wore that tape out.
Yeah, well, who didn't?
Didn't see the sequels, though.
Don't do that. No, seriously, don't do that. Oh. Like, Son of the Mask is one of the worst fucking things I've ever seen in my life. It is absolutely horrific in a way that you wouldn't expect. Like, even though it stars Alan Cumming also chewing the scenery as the bad guy, Son of the Mask is one of the... Well, don't watch it. I'm just going to leave it there. Do not watch that.
Zach watches a lot of bad things on purpose, and he's telling me and everyone here, don't watch this movie.
Yeah,
so
don't do it. It's not.
But the original isn't that what like launched Cameron Diaz's career?
It did, yeah. I'm not sure how it's aging. I saw it again recently, and I don't know.
It's cartoon. It's cartoon antics.
It's cartoon antics, yeah. But anyway, so Lindsay, would you recommend the film Sonic the Hedgehog?
I think everyone should watch it once, and I'll probably own it when it comes out on home video because my kid liked it a lot. And there's a stinger at the end for a potential sequel that he's excited about the prospects of. So
you do
we'll see.
You do get the full Sonic by the end. You get everything you think you might be getting.
Yeah,
The specific transformation of Jim Carrey was quite. I thought it was hilarious. I thought that was great. Not great, but this is what everyone wants, right? So let's not fuck around. Let's not redesign it too much. Like you're gonna get what you think you're gonna get.
I mean, they get him in his Eggman suit,
right? Yeah.
By the end of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no spoilers, but like. Yeah, and there's another character that you probably expected to show up that does show up. So, Well, anyway, I really honestly did not expect to walk out of that going like, well, it was fun.
Yeah.
I had a good time. It was fucking weird, but I had a good time. Like, and I will remember that. Like, that, which has become in the content glut that we currently live in, it's become, that's become like currency for entertainment for me, is like whether or not your thing is memorable or it's just going to slide off of me or like I'll watch it and then forget it 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
So that's become a thing. So in other movie news, there was an event called the Academy Awards, which you may have heard of. All right. I have been a lifelong movie fan, which anyone who listens to this would know, and you know, lifelong sort of obsession with the movies. And I've been paying attention to the Oscars since I was like, I don't know, 12, something like that. You know, filling out ballots and like, who are the winners going to be, and you know, all that stuff. And I know that like, it's really popular to be super blasé about the Oscars and be like, I don't care, who cares? Like, I watch what I want to watch, and you know, I'm going to watch CSI instead or whatever the fuck. But I've always loved the Oscars, and I usually try to watch everything that gets nominated, and they sometimes have really bad judgment. A lot of Best Picture winners are not good movies. For instance, Green Book. For instance, Crash. For instance, The King's Speech, which is an okay movie, but it's not, wasn't Best Picture that year.
Yeah.
This year, though, Parasite swept.
Yeah.
Which I was, like, thrilled with.
Yeah.
And frankly, all the winners were quite good. The Best Animated was kind of lame, but not only...
Wasn't it Toy Story?
It was Toy Story 4, yeah. But yeah. Whatever. Pearl Mare didn't even get nominated, so fuck it. But all the winners were quite good, and even though I hated Joker, as we've talked about, I thought Joaquin Phoenix's speech was really, really good. You know, very self-conscious and self-aware. And all of the Parasite director's speeches were really touching. Like, he got up and was basically like, okay, so I just won Best Director over Marty Scorsese and all these other amazing people. And, like, his articulation was basically that, like, as filmmakers, we sort of share a cosmic connection and an understanding by experiencing each other's work. And we're all influenced by each other. Like, that was his... articulation. I thought that was beautiful. Yeah. I thought that was a wonderful thing to say. And I thought all of his acceptance speeches, and he was up there a lot.
Yeah.
Like, nobody has swept that hard since like Walt Disney back in the day.
Yeah.
So it was a great, and there was no host, which is fine. And they kept it, you know, to a relatively, they didn't go over too hard or as long as they sometimes do. But it was the rare good Oscars. Like, it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I mean, isn't it also the first foreign language film to win Best Picture?
Yes, it is. Which is really something. Like, hopefully that opens it up a little bit to where, like,
yeah, it definitely opened up the dub versus sub debate all over again, which is, but I mean, go watch it with sub. I watch everything with subtitles, even if it's in English.
Yeah, because,
you know, I have my husband has some hearing loss, and so I'm just used to having subtitles on, and it helps.
Well,
it also helps me follow a little better.
Yeah, me too.
Hearing and reading at the same time, so I feel like I follow films and TV shows a lot better that way. So I just always have subtitles on.
Yeah. Plus, if you want to like take a screenshot for social media, the subtitles will be there. And you can make whatever point it is you're trying to make.
Yes, you can also use it to one-up people on Twitter. That's true. but yeah, so I don't really understand like the aversion to subtitles. It's just
normies. You know. It's just basic bitches who, you know, it's an old complaint. It's like subtitles, you know, like, yeah, all right, grow the fuck up. Read.
Yeah.
Just try to fucking read. Like, come on. Learn to read.
Also watch Parasite. It's an amazing movie.
Like, the only excuse for having trouble with that is if you have some kind of a disability with that.
Right,
otherwise, fucking learn to read.
Yeah. Right, right.
You scroll in your social media feed all day, you can read some fucking subtitles.
Yeah.
That's not all audio. What's in the news, buddy?
Yeah. So the big news story from the last week, it centers on My Hero Academia, and it'll also tie in a little bit to a movie we're going to talk about later.
Oh, indeed.
But there was a character. He's appeared several times in the manga. He's even appeared in the anime, and he appears in the recent movie. But he was using an alias name for a long time. They revealed what his real name was in, I guess now it would be two chapters ago, and it tapped into, perhaps unintentionally, controversy involving Japanese war crimes. And this ended up just exploding over the internet. Last time I checked, the series, the manga and the anime are not available in China anymore at all. Like, it was taken off Bilibili and Tencent.
I thought they wound up relisting it.
They hadn't as of the 10th. I have not checked in the last 4 days. So if it's back up, it would have been within the last 4 days.
Okay.
But yeah, it got removed from Bilibili and Tencent, a mobile game that was being made, action RPG mobile game that was being made in China, might be canceled altogether. And it was all because the name for the character was revealed to be Maruta Shiga. And if you just Google Maruta, you know, you get pictures of wood, like logs and stuff like that. And that's a reoccurring naming scheme that Horikoshi uses for characters that don't have quirks. They usually have a kanji for forest or tree or wood or something in their name. Unfortunately, Maruta, spelled the way that he spelled it in the manga, was a term used for victims of war crimes during the Second World War, specifically Chinese and Korean victims of experimentation and things like that. The character is a scientist, a doctor slash scientist who happens to experiment on people in the manga. Like, he made the Nomu that show up in like the first or second season. Those like kind of monstrous looking things that attacked the academy.
Mm-hmm.
So
not that, so in other words, not an accident.
Probably not an accident. I mean,
look, like when people discuss this stuff, and I'm not trying to say like, let's all cancel Horikoshi. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the expectation that this was like, whoops, is you don't understand the process of creation because mm-hmm. that was obviously deliberate. I don't think it was meant as an insult.
Right.
But the character's a bad guy, right?
Yes, yeah, he's a villain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so then it was a poor choice.
Yeah.
I don't think he was like, "Haha, I sure am going to insult the former victims of Japanese war crimes." I don't think that was his aim.
That was his intention either. It was just a
tasteless choice.
Right. The apologies from, because at this point Shueisha like issued an official apology, a really, really long one, and so did Horikoshi, and both of them are standing by it being coincidental, but also promising educate themselves better in these matters going forward so it doesn't happen again. So
don't make that choice rolling forward, but I do not believe it was a coincidence at all.
Yeah.
It was like, didn't think that this would insult people because the character is a villain. That feels more correct to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit more like, you just made a bad choice. Like, don't do that. Don't take your superhero manga and be like, this villain is named Joseph Mengele. Like, don't do that. Just come up with a different name.
Yeah. So, and the character did get renamed.
Right, yeah.
And kept some of the same elements. Like, it still has the wood element in his first name, but it's now no longer synonymous with the name that the Japanese army used for the victims.
Sure.
And they changed the last name, too. So the last name was originally taken from the name of All for One. Like, Shigaraki, I guess, is his last name.
Yeah.
And so he took Shiga, and that was supposed to be the last name for the doctor. But Shiga also happens to be the name of a bacteria that was used on the victims as well, I think, because they deliberately infected them with a bunch of different things for...
Yeah.
Yeah. So he changed it to just Garaki instead. So the character's been officially renamed. I don't know for sure.
Did they like retroactively go back and like change all of this?
Right. Yeah. So like, if you look at the digital chapter now, it's changed in the digital chapters, and it'll be changed in the official print when it goes to print too, like in the book form.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I definitely don't think that Horikoshi or My Hero Academia should be like, you know, canceled over this.
Right.
But it's good that they fixed it, and just like, don't do that. Just don't do that. Like, just pick a different name. It's not just, whoops, you know, it's that drill tweet. Sorry, I'm trying to remove it, you know. That's that. So, yeah, well, at least it's resolved now. Hopefully it'll hopefully it'll come back and to all the fans in China and Korea and all that, and they won't be so insulted by it. Well, they made the right choice, though. Okay, so speaking of My Hero Academia, the two things we were talking about this week, we have two movies, well, three movies, including Sonic the Hedgehog. the two movies we have to talk about this week are My Hero Academia Heroes Rising and Masaaki Yuasa's Ride Your Wave, both of which are in theaters in the next 2 weeks. So you can see Ride Your Wave next week on the 19th, I think, is when it opens. And which is incidentally the same day as the My Hero Academia premiere in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, incidentally. Anyway, there's a lot of good anime in theaters. So My Hero Academia, the movie Heroes Rising, is I don't know, man. I don't know. I was okay with it, but like, it is just 90 minutes of fighting.
Yeah.
It is 90 minutes of fighting. That is virtually meaningless because it's a Shonen Jump movie with one-off characters.
Yeah, the plot's pretty thin.
Yeah, it's super thin. It's basically, here we are once again, Class 1A on an isolated island where, well, we're completely separated from the rest of the story. And from what I understand, this is actually not really canon, right? It's not.
I mean, there's really nothing that happens in it or by the end of it that would affect anything in the show.
That would change anything. So, yeah. Right. So, which is like the first movie.
Yes.
Which is like every Shonen Jump movie, which is like every Naruto movie and every Dragon Ball movie and all that shit.
I would give the first one like just a little credit because it gives you some All Might backstory.
At least, you get a little bit. But so this is about basically they're like, well, after All Might retired, we need more heroes. So promote Class 1A to full hero status, which, you know, and they'll be dealing with real hero. They'll be dealing with real stuff, which I thought to be like, as a storytelling device, this is lame because that is what happens constantly in My Hero Academia. They're always handling real hero stuff, but they're only supposed to be students. Like,
right.
You know, this time it's just they did the paperwork. So they wind up landing on this isolated island, you know, idyllic island where we've never had villains here. You're like, I wonder what will happen. So they wind up landing on this island and you get a bunch of like, it does the thing that all these movies do where you're like, you get these, you know, a little character moment for each of your favorites that, you know, expresses kind of their character traits. And then of course, now I don't want to blow your mind here, but villains show up.
Oh, what?
And one of them, basically, the main guy has the same power. And honestly, I thought this was lame. He has the same power as All for One.
Yeah.
It's just the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, I can't believe, you know, Deku is like, I can't believe he has the same power as all. And like, I can. You're out of ideas. I didn't dislike the film. I'm just saying, like, the storyline is a little like, all right. So they have to beat the villains and save people.
Yeah.
And the villain is specifically chasing after a little boy who has the ability to regenerate cells.
Yeah, a healing ability.
He has a healing ability. And the villain, who has the same power as All for One, can steal quirks and wants this because his body breaks down after using it for too long. You know, all right. The only thing is it's like, this is a fucking Naruto movie. It's a fucking Naruto movie. Like, nothing of consequence is going to happen.
Yeah.
They keep doing, and the it is just nonstop fucking fighting.
Yeah.
That's all they do is fight. And it's always like, it's a little One Piece. It reminded me a lot. It's a little like One Piece, and it's a little like that Broly movie, that Dragon Ball Z Broly movie with nonstop action, which is fine. I'm fine with that. It's just that the action lacks emotional impact because you know what's going to happen right away.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, this guy's too strong for us. Yeah, well, you'll beat him eventually. Oh no, I've been pounded. You know, I got my ass kicked. Yeah, well, you'll probably kick their ass in the end. Like, you know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And this one felt just particularly low stakes to me.
It felt like yeah, okay, I already know. You always know what's gonna happen in a Shonen Jump movie. The hero's gonna win, bad guy's gonna lose. Power of friendship actually saves us all. That's always what happens.
Yeah,
it was fine.
I felt like the climax too was just like a reskinned version of the last film.
Exactly.
So like
except
the last
now
film,
it's Deku and Bakugo.
Yes. So the last one was Deku and All Might like putting their powers together to like super double punch shit. And I like that was the first time I've seen it, and I am not like I haven't watched a whole bunch of Shonen Jump films, so I got into the first movie and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
and
it was fun,
you know, them teaming up together and you know got into the energy of all of it. But when they did it all over again with Bakugo, it was like they've already done this.
Yeah, I've seen this movie.
Also,
before.
Like Bakugo getting like a memory wipe at the end, so he doesn't even remember any of it.
Yeah, because
like, come on,
is it always has to? It always has to set back to the status quo because it can't impact the actual main story,
right? Or even the relationships between the characters. I guess like this could have at least affected their camaraderie. You know, their ally versus rival crap.
It's not,
but it's like no, Bakugo doesn't remember, so.
Yeah,
you know, he still hates your fucking guts.
Back to status quo. It's always like that.
Oh, man.
Because and I was kind of led to believe by some of the reviews and some of the chatter I had heard about this that this one was a little bit more consequential, and it, you know, there was like a I thought somebody told me there was like a time skip in it, but there isn't. And like I don't know, I in the end I was like, well, that was it was fine. It was just kind of empty. Like,
yeah,
all right. So he's obviously does not transfer one for all to
Bakugo.
He obviously fucking doesn't do that.
Yeah.
That would change the entire story.
Right.
So you know full fucking well none of this means anything, and they're totally just going to hit the reset button at the end, which they do.
Yeah.
So it's not to say it's not a fun time, and it, you know, Bones animated the shit out of this. Like,
oh yeah, there's a lot of really, really well done fight animation in this.
Yeah, it just gets exhausting after a while.
Yeah,
and like it's all effects animation and really flashy fight animation, which is great. The choreography's good. It's fun to watch. I don't know. I like to feel things when I watch a movie.
Yeah,
and on this one, and so here's the other thing is that like so I'm not caught up on My Hero Academia. I'm like behind by like half a season or something like that.
Yeah, me too.
And you don't need to know. There's like a character or two you might not recognize, but it's you don't need to be caught up. The entire first 15 minutes of this movie is expositing about what has happened in this series so far.
Yeah, they catch you up real early on. I think, like, the only part that I really enjoyed, I guess, was when they did a couple of the fights with the characters that usually don't get any spotlight. Like,
sure.
the Shadow Crow guy and the Acid Girl. Like,
yeah, that was the interesting part was the Shadow, what's his name? I don't know what his name is.
The Crow guy.
Well, the Crow guy, like, you know, you kind of see, like, the extent of how powerful he actually is.
Mm-hmm.
That part was cool.
Yeah, it was like, give him his own show.
Yeah, it was interesting. It woke me up, let's say that. But I do think, like, if you, like, just go see this at the first screening you can get tickets to, where all of the diehards will be there and cheering for their favorites. That is the way to watch this. That is the way you will enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have a good time. But just as an observation, I do think, and this has kind of been lingering in the back of my head, I think it was a bad idea for him to write All Might out of the show, or out of the manga.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, I miss that character. Like, and
yeah.
It's not just like a sentimental thing, it's like, when he shows up, the whole thing comes to life.
Yeah, like when he shows up in a superhero form and he's got the smile and
he's
everything.
Got the smile.
He's like, don't worry, I'm here.
Yeah, it brings the whole show to life. So writing him out, which is what he effectively did,
yeah,
I do think kind of damaged My Hero Academia's emotional impact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can only imagine that, you know, because the character is still technically around.
Right.
But it feels like he's just sort of marked for eventual death.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, don't. Don't do that. Don't kill Superman. Like, the Justice League is not as good without Superman. You do need Superman to be there. Otherwise, yeah. You're just like, yeah, yeah, Bakugo. Like, and Bakugo's my favorite character. But, yeah. Like, you also want All Might to be there, like, at least at some point. So, yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to think. It's fine. It's just, I don't know.
Would you recommend it?
Would I recommend them? I mean...
That's you're like, nah.
I mean, no, not really. I mean, it feels
which feels
a really well animated TV spot. Like, because there's no consequence to it, it's really hard to say you need to see something when it doesn't matter to the overall story.
So you said you haven't seen like a lot of Shonen Jump movies,
right?
Which do you remember? Maybe which ones you have seen?
The other My Hero Academia movie
and nothing else, like not like any Inuyasha movies
do those Ranma movie special things count? I've maybe seen some of those
kind of
maybe. Did that even run in Shonen Jump?
I don't think so.
Okay, no, I guess not. No, I never watched the Naruto movies or the Inuyasha movies
or the One Piece
movies.
Yeah. Well, they're all like this. It's all consequence free. You introduce a new character that will never appear again.
Right.
And nothing of there are no stakes, basically. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that you go into a Shonen Jump movie and you know there will not be any stakes for the actual story of this thing.
Then what's the selling point on them? Just to like...
Yeah, you go to the theater and you visit your friends.
And whoop it up.
And you whoop it up, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, not in Japan, but you whoop it up. Here you whoop it up.
Yeah.
And there you're not supposed to be rowdy.
Yeah. They have special screenings for that now.
They do. They have special rowdy screenings, yeah. Which is great. You know, that's good. But nothing of consequence is going to happen. And that really, to me, just saps it of a lot of what could potentially be interesting about it.
Yeah.
So I found myself kind of, you know, not necessarily sleeping through this, but
were you multitasking?
Just yes.
Yes.
And I kind of do wish I had seen it. So, like I said, the premiere is next week in Hollywood, and they're doing special screenings, I think, starting on the 26th of this month or something like that. So 2 weeks from now, you'll be able to see this in theaters. I recommend getting tickets. If you love My Hero Academia, you will have a good time, even if the movie doesn't have much of an impact on you.
Right.
But they're like, hey, do you want to come to the premiere? And I was like, nah, we've already got we have two reviews of it already. And I watched it at home. So it's like, we'll have some cast interviews. We'll do that part.
Yeah,
I'm good.
And I'd have to say the first My Hero Academia film, I saw it at a con premiere, and I don't know how much that affects like my memory of enjoying it, but I saw it with a group of rowdy fans who were really really into it, and it just made it more exciting.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we've talked about that a lot on this show where it's just more fun to see it. It's like premiere, you know, you see it with a super rowdy audience.
Yeah.
Just you get hyped up. It makes it more fun. And this one is so fucking inconsequential and just nonstop fights.
Yeah.
After about the first 15 minutes, it is just another hour 15 of just nonstop, you know, bravado action animation and fighting that ultimately leads to nothing. But you'll still have a good time. I'm not recommending it, but, you know. Keep your expectations managed on this one, I think. So there's another movie we saw that was wonderful. And it is called Ride Your Wave. And it's a film by Masaki Yuasa. Now, this one, again, opens on the 19th. So get your tickets now. Lindsay, tell me what Ride Your Wave is about.
It's about making me cry.
No shit.
God, I was so sad through most of this movie. But like it's a sentimental film. It's about a girl who moves to a coastal town to go to college because she wants to be a marine biologist. She wants to work in marine biology, and she loves surfing. And then she meets a guy who is also living there, and he's a firefighter. And he's noticed her surfing before, and he refers to her as his hero. We don't really know why until the end of the film, but he does. And they end up meeting when a bunch of hooligans light off a bunch of fireworks that catch her apartment on fire. Because I don't know how many people are familiar with this, but there's a lot of buildings in Japan that are highly flammable. And hers was one of them. So he rescues her on the roof. They have immediate chemistry. She's going to teach him how to surf. He talks to her about wanting to someday open a coffee shop. They're just like cutesy lovey-dovey. And there's none of the usual, like, will they, won't they? Like, they hit it off, and they're like an item within, like, the first half hour of the film.
Yeah, and just to say, like, I thought the articulation of their relationship was perfect.
Yes. Yes, it was. It felt very, like, real to me as far as being, well, like, a college-aged.
Yeah, that's how it is. You steal little kisses and hold hands.
Yeah, I mean, so he asks her out pretty bluntly. You know, there isn't, like, a shyness buildup. You could tell he likes her, and he wants to ask her out. And, you know, they're, like, nervous at first. And then he asks, he's like, bit. I want to see you again. And she agrees.
But,
and,
like,
it was nice to see a relationship, like, take off in a usual way when we usually have anime where it's, like, you're waiting, like, waiting for 12 episodes for one of them to admit that they like the other one.
Like, Lindsay, have you ever fallen in love?
I'm married. Yes. Yeah.
That's what it's like.
Yeah.
That articulation of that was like, oh, yeah. Wow. I'm not used to seeing this in anime. I'm used to seeing these sort of weird. And that's not to use anime as a pejorative or anything, but I am totally used to seeing these like kind of weird will they, won't they things where everyone's really standoffish.
Yeah.
But this was just like, hey, you want to get together? Yeah. I love you. It's that's what it's like.
I mean,
you hold hands, you do shit together, you laugh, you sit on the couch, you kiss.
Yeah.
It's cute. It's fun.
Yes, it's cute.
It's great.
It's cute.
Oh, I thought it was perfect.
And then, god damn it, I mean, we're going to get to what the movie is really about, he dies.
Yeah, so he
dies. I didn't know that from any of the trailer stuff coming out. I didn't know this was a movie about grief, like, at all.
It's about loss.
About loss and grieving
and recovering from loss.
And recovery, too. But I didn't know that was like the central point of the film. I thought it was just a romance story. So
no,
when they got together so soon, I was like, where's the conflict going to be? Because, you know, I thought it was going to play out a little longer. So where's the conflict going to be? And then then he dies. And then I just cried for 70 minutes. But it's beautiful in the way that it, you know, articulates her loss and how difficult it is. You know, they had promises to each other. They were talking about moving in together. He was very frank about wanting to marry her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, but the thing is, like, when you fall in love really fast like that.
Yeah.
And it's, again, a lot of people do that. To me, that was like, yeah, this is how it is.
Yeah.
Like, when you really love somebody, even if you've only been together for a few months and you just have so much chemistry like that, you immediately start thinking about spending your lives together. And it's not too fast for them. They felt the same way about each other.
Yeah. So I got the impression they were maybe together maybe 6 months or something.
Yeah, something like
the
that.
Seasonal change or something. Cause he dies in the winter and they think they get together in the summer.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had a very intense, perfect seeming relationship. She had started to meet his family. Like, he introduced her to his sister. Yeah.
Well, you know.
And then an accident happens, you know, no one sees it coming. And then she has to reconcile, like, what's her life now? What is she going to do with her life?
And specifically, he takes up an interest in surfing because of her and then dies while surfing.
Yeah.
Like, he dies on the waves. And is, so then there's a supernatural element.
Right. The supernatural element is interesting because it's hard.
It's a little metaphorical.
Metaphorical, right? About, like, her holding on to her memory of him and how maybe she's using that as a crutch for not taking control of her life yet. She's not ready to face the waves of her life on her own yet. So she's not ready
to overcome the grief yet.
Yeah.
She's not ready yet.
Yeah.
And neither is his sister.
Right. And they're handling it in different ways. Yeah,
right. And the contrast was fascinating between the two of them, like the different ways they were handling it. And his sister moves on a little faster than she does. And I really enjoyed the scenes
where she was talking to the main character about, like, you know, you have to get past this, and mm-hmm. you're not going fast enough for me.
Yeah.
Like, that was really interesting.
Yeah, because you can tell the sister wants her to move on because it's hard for the sister to, like, reconcile her own feelings of loss when she has this woman here constantly reminding her that her brother's dead and being sad about her brother.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, in the end, she does. Yeah. They figure it out.
Yeah.
And, God, what a great fucking movie.
I like that they didn't also, like, put a giant Band-Aid on it. Like, she decides that she's going to move on, and then she takes the CPR class. And while she's doing it, I'm like, God, this would be, triggering for me if my significant other had drowned. And she does see him, and she runs away at first, and she has to recollect herself. Like, this is going to continually be a process.
Yeah, that's as an articulation of what it's like to be triggered.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the emotional intelligence in this thing is off the fucking charts.
Yeah.
Man, I was blown away. I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Totally.
And sad, but, like, it was like a good cry. Like, the whole time I was like,
yeah, but you want that emotional intensity. You want that want to feel something.
Yeah.
And this feels so lived in. Like, it's so human. It's so of the it really feels like they are articulating emotions in this that you don't really see articulated this well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of movies about grief.
Yeah.
This one felt like it was really just getting right in there. Like, taking no prisoners, but also, like, incredibly touching and just lived in. It was really, it was fucking great.
And it was also beautiful.
Oh, God.
Beautifully animated. They do some really interesting things with, I'll call it camera choreography, even though, you know, it's animated, where that you don't see in anime very often, like filming from the perspective of the front of her bike. These sort of like fisheye sort of lens type things that you don't see very often, at least in anime. So that kind of gave it a unique feel, too, that they were doing interesting things visually as well as having a really, really good story.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Now, what a great thing. So this is Science Saru, Masaki Iwasa and On Young Choi. And it doesn't quite look so, like, you might be used to, like, the sort of noodly animation that you might see in other Science Saru projects. This one's a little bit more standard. It's a little less, it's more reserved, I would say, in terms of character animation and design.
Yeah, I would say the design reminded me a little bit of what you might see from a Mamoru
Hosoda.
Film. It reminded me a little bit of that style. Not
But it was still Science Saru. You can still tell because they have the little cat mouths and the, all that stuff. Like, that's all still in there. It's just, it's taking itself seriously. Mm-hmm. So it's not noodly and wacky. It's serious. And I take no issue with that. I definitely thought this was a significantly better film than Weathering with You.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Am I too enthusiastic about that? But yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, sure, it's still about, romance, and water is a major element in it, but this one connected with me much better. I connected much better with this than I did with Weathering with You. I don't know if it's just because... No, I know why. It's because the couple is older, like closer to my age, and because the trajectory of the relationship felt more like what I am used to experiencing myself. So
it just felt a lot more human.
Yeah.
It just, that really, I can't overstress that like, you're going to go see this and you're going to cry because it's going to fucking touch right at your heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, fucking buy tickets to Ride Your Wave and go see it.
Yes.
And bring some tissues.
Yes.
Bring some tissues.
Yeah. It affected me for like the rest of the day. I went shopping after that. I needed to pick up some Valentines for my kids for their class. And I like bought myself flowers on the way out just because I was like, I need something nice.
Well, it's not sad. Like, I really did think the ending was like uplifting. Like,
yes.
It gets there. But it is about loss. It is about grief. Yeah. And, movies that really make you feel like that,
Mm-hmm.
That's rare.
Yeah.
So, couldn't recommend it more. Next week, you could double feature Sonic the Hedgehog and Roger Wave if you want to. Just back to back them.
Yeah.
For just total whiplash. Okay. Well, anyway, so we got a few questions this week. Most people haven't seen these movies at all, so it's we didn't get too many.
Yeah.
Stefan asks our friend Zinky. He says, "Are there many inside jokes in the Sonic movie for old fans?" Yes.
Yeah, there are definitely some in there. One of the most obvious ones is
It's not some. There are a shit ton of jokes for Sonic
fans. Old school Sonic. Okay, well, the ones that I picked up on or noticed immediately is like the starting zone. Green Hills is the name of the town in Montana where the story starts.
Uh-huh.
Which is, you know, and there's some music cue stuff. I think there's one point where like his rings spill out and they have the sound effect from the game.
There's a tinkly piano music version of the music from the opening level at the end of the film.
Yeah.
If anyone remembers Sanic, which is S-A-N-I-C.
Yeah.
A famous child's drawing of Sonic the Hedgehog that has been an internet meme for a really long time appears in the film. So the answer to you is yes.
Oh, they also make a reference to the Badniks when Robotnik is flipping some switches.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
There's stuff all over the place.
It's all over that. It's dripping with it. So hopefully if you're an old school Sonic fan, they put shit in there for you. Let's see. Nos Anime asks, what are the key factors in making a good Shonen Jump film of a popular franchise?
You're going to know more about this than me.
I don't know the answer to that because it's unrealistic to expect, having seen so many of these, it is unrealistic to expect them to do anything significant. It's always going to be one-off, not canon, doesn't really impact the story. You don't see any consequences from the film in the show or the manga. It is always one-off.
So is there like a way to make that still entertaining though? Like in,
I don't know. I think the guiding principle is like, well, you can't expect everyone to watch the movie, so you don't want to change the story too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, all right, you know, okay, but you know what you're going to get every single time. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that aside from completely changing their editorial outlook on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's see. Smith Eric, what was the first anime film you saw in a major theater? We've come a long way since the days of waiting forever for a home release sold at Suncoast. Indeed. What is the first anime? Can you remember what the first?
Yeah, I can. I'm not sure which I saw first. It was either Princess Mononoke or Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust.
Oh, those were mine too.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, it might have been. Well, I don't think there was an earlier Miyazaki theatrical release. So yeah, it probably would have been Princess Mononoke, and Vampire Hunter D was later than that. So
yeah, I saw Princess Mononoke at a local theater, but I had to drive over the bridge to the bigger city to see Bloodlust.
So I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and I would have to drive to Phoenix, which is about 90 minutes away.
Oh yeah,
to see either of these things.
Yeah,
because they wouldn't open in Tucson.
Yeah.
All right. Last question from DigiCarrot. How long did it take you to get that song from Ride Your Wave out of your head? It's still in there, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've been able to get it out since. Boy, that's a great movie. Please buy tickets and go see it and talk it up to your friends and get them to go see it because it's fucking great.
Yeah.
Turned into such a huge Yuasa stan. But goddamn,
hey, he deserves it.
Yeah, well, he's man, this shit just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better. Like,
yeah,
really great.
I can't wait for his next. I mean, after Eizouken ends, like, I think the next thing we're getting from him is the Japan Sinks show on Netflix.
Yeah, so we got more coming this year. So yeah, it's a Yuasa avalanche. It's just wallow around in it.
Yeah,
that's what I'm gonna do. All right, that does it for us. Thanks, buddy.
All right, see you guys next time.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for stopping on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcasts, iTunes, you know, whatever. Leave comments and stuff. It helps the show. Thanks a lot. Who cares? Anyway, we'll see y'all next week.